Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
10 seconds.
He rolls into it.
Wow, he might get it. Take it.
Way of the Warrior.
One of his legs could fight at welterweight, I'm sure.
Probably.
Roll mount, here's some ground, and pound by O'Gara.
I think the first 2 minutes were everything we thought it was going to be, and then after that, it was the surprise of the night.
If it happens in MMA, you hear about it here. Your MMA show, Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior, Eric Hultgren, along with Ken Evans, covering everything in the world of mixed martial arts until we don't have anything else to talk about, which doesn't seem like it's going to be a thing in the near future. And before we jump in, I wanted to say very quickly and get your gut reaction on this before we jump in. The Ken Evans hot take of the week. Our executive producer, Ryan Dempsey, messaged me last night, Ken, and he said between June 4th and July 30th, there are 8 title fights. And he wanted your over-under on how many of those will actually happen.
June 4th to when?
July 30th. There are 8.
Wow, 8. I don't know.
Including your favorite one, the random interim one that is not really an interim.
I don't even know. I can't keep up right now. I don't know, because I would have thought out of any of these dudes that were going to be going, it would have been Weidman Rockhold was your lock. And I should say dudes or ladies that are going. That would have been your lock, and we just saw what happened to that fight this week. So
and
let's
to be,
see, 8 title fights.
Yeah.
Let's say 6.
All right, we're going
mark
with 6.
Mark that down, and that'll be... That'll be well. I need a half. I'll give 5.5.
5.5.
Yeah,
I will
are
go.
Happen.
I'll
and
go
I'm
under.
Take the, I'll take the over.
I'll take 5, and you take the over. So you got 5.5 with the over. Okay. So we've
well,
got.
Then you've got 5.5 with the under.
Right. Exactly. Okay. So we've got. You do that.
You can't just make up your own numbers when you go to Vegas. That'd be really cool.
That's why I don't win when I go there, apparently. We got tons of stuff to talk about. We will talk about Weidman and Rockhold and the replacement, but we will start in Brazil, where it seemed like everything was going Brazil's way.
Oh, wasn't it, though?
Right up until Cleveland decided to show up because they wanted their championship, and they did not care at which cost that championship came. Stipe Miocic KOing Fabricio Werdum, who came into this fight with what many are calling the single dumbest strategy to fight Stipe, but I have a different philosophy after I get your take, Ken.
Well, I don't have a take on this. It was just kind of an interesting dynamic to see how that whole walk-in went and kind of watch the dichotomy of the two fighters coming in. Obviously, one in a very hostile crowd. The other guy probably as loose like as we've ever seen a fighter. I thought it was interesting. Maybe we can talk a little bit about this later. Brian Stann being on that commentary rather than Joe Rogan, I don't think gave us quite the perspective on some of that looseness, but we did certainly see one of the looser fighters we've ever seen come into a fight.
Sure.
Especially a championship fight with Fabricio Werdum coming into the arena. I mean, it was his house at that night. The Brazilians had basically been running up the score, so to speak. I mean, even the fans got involved. They got to attack Matt Brown a couple times, which I guess...
They're up 3.
Is really, which bodes really well for the Olympics.
Yeah, it's awesome.
So, I mean, it was kind of just a train rolling down the hill up until Stipe Miocic showed up, and I don't know if it was strategy as much as just... Fabricio Werdum, you know, went in there very confident. I don't think he walked into anything per se. I do find it very interesting. He got caught a little earlier than the actual KO punch, and his strategy there was to run into Stipe. I think he was trying to pressure the guy. Let's remember, that's the same way he ended up fighting against, I want to say it was the Fedor fight. I know he pulled that off with a submission, but he put pressure on to eventually get to that point. So he was just doing what he's done over and over and over again. It's kind of put pressure on a guy. But sometimes when you put pressure on the dude and you don't keep those hands all the way up, Stipe does what Stipe did there, and he'll knock you out.
Well, and I think we are on the same page. I think that overhand right earlier not only catches Werdum, but I feel like probably had him out standing up a little bit. And that's why he's running hands down, chin forward, because his, as you just said, his body knows the thing to do. I'm going to pressure this guy because it's worked every other time.
Mm-hmm.
But the other part of his body, the defensive part, is forgetting to do its thing because he's sort of out on his feet, which is why he then gets clipped and KO'd. When I see stuff like this, and I know you and I are very similar 99.9% of the time, but when I see stuff like this, I don't see anything in that demands an immediate rematch, despite Fabricio Werdum's calling for said rematch.
See, I don't necessarily see it. The only thing I think about is, like, where is this heavyweight division? And I thought an interesting stat was we haven't had a heavyweight fighter in years essentially defend their title more than 2 times.
No.
And I think that's a really interesting dynamic to kind of look at here. You know, if he... This is one of those where I don't care, honestly. If you want to give the guy a rematch, cool. If you don't, that's fine too. Because I don't think Stipe's got anybody looming out there that definitively should get a title shot other than possibly Alistair Overeem.
So you don't think the Kane Travis Brown is going to be at 200?
That's at 200. I think we're going to see a fight before that. I don't think that winner necessarily gets Stipe at this point. I don't know. I know Alistair's calling for the fight. Where's he at now? Number 3 in the division, something like that.
Yes.
Obviously the Travis Brown fight's a big fight, and that's going to be something that shakes out. Right now, I don't know, and we'll know in 30 days with a lot of these other fights happening and some heavyweight fighters and things like that happening. I just think we're a little too far, because even though this was 198 and 200 only seems like it's only two away, there's big breaks in these actual pay-per-views which we haven't seen in a while.
Like, we've got a week off this week, which we don't normally have.
So things feel a lot closer, but, we're in the middle of May, and essentially this was last week, so this was the middle of May. It was May 14th, right?
Yep.
So you've got a fight May 14th, and you've got a new champion, and you've got UFC 200 July 7th. That is a full public school math tells me 9 weeks.
So you're thinking of putting Overeem Stipe on 200.
Not on 200. Okay. Maybe 201, 202.
Got it.
Those two, I think you line those two up. And then maybe next guy up is those guys at 200. I don't know. I don't think the UFC, and I'd have to grab a schedule and really look at it and put it in front of me. I don't think the UFC can afford to take their brand new heavyweight champion. Basically, he waits 9 weeks to find out who his opponent is, and God knows what happens in that match. Are those guys going to be cleared
fight at
200? That timing doesn't seem right to me. Honestly, have I missed something? Are people calling for that to be the title eliminator at this point?
They were prior, and you and I talked about this 2 weeks ago. We said if Stipe wins, he ruins everything. Mm-hmm. Because this was kind of laying out very nicely, because traditionally, and I don't agree with this tradition, but traditionally it would be Verdum would defend against Stipe, and then he would go back in New York, right?
Right, okay.
Because that's kind of what's been, which is the problem with the heavyweight division.
And that's a guy, too, but that had been champion for a little bit. So, yeah, a little longer window for him is fine. But, I still didn't agree with the fact that you're going to sit, essentially, for 8 weeks, wait for your opponent, wait for them to be cleared, and then everybody starts a camp. That's going to put your heavyweight champion, who you just crowned, who is an American, by the way, and you're making a lot of money here. I know you make a lot of money in Brazil, but you make a lot of money here in pay-per-view revenues and UFC.TV all of those things and ticket sales. You've got a dude that just won the heavyweight championship of the world, which is becoming the de facto baddest man on the planet at this point. Whoever's the UFC heavyweight champion, that's the biggest, baddest, scariest dude on the planet right now, and that is Stipe Miocic, and I don't think you sit him and wait for those dudes to become the quote-unquote number one contender when you've got a perfectly good fight out there in two options. You've either got a rematch, which I don't mind, or you've got Alistair Overeem. I don't think you take those two fights and then make those fights wait 9 weeks, and then let's see if everybody's cleared medically, and if they're not, where do we put these guys? I don't think UFC can afford to do that with a new heavyweight champion of the world.
And to frame the baddest man on the planet statement that you just made, Fabricio Verdum dropped 11 spots in the pound-for-pound rankings on UFC.com.
Mm-hmm.
11 spots after that performance, which I just think is crazy town.
Well, it's a little bit crazy, but it's also, I think, attributable to the fact that a lot of guys look at this pound for pound as like, how would they do if they were 155 pounds and they had this game plan? And those heavyweights are never going to get that kind of credit because they're not that small. They're a different kind of fighter. There's a different kind of division. I think this shows when we see fights like this. Brian Stann nailed it during that broadcast. These guys are so big that you would see that happen in a lightweight fight and a guy gets rocked and he goes down. You see it in a heavyweight fight. These guys are so big. You saw a dude that's undeniably tough, that's undeniably been through some wars, that's undeniably and undisputed the UFC heavyweight champion of the world, go down like a ton of bricks, getting hit by a guy from Cleveland. So these are big, bad dudes. Now, pound for pound wise, I don't think we're necessarily ranking big, bad dudes. We're ranking guys, look, how fast are they moving around?
Sure.
What are
sure.
they doing in the cage? Are they spinny? Are they kicky? Are they jumpy? Cool. Badass.
I love all the descriptors.
Right, exactly. But I'm not surprised by that. It seems a little crazy, but I'm not surprised by that because heavyweights don't necessarily get that credit. But you know what credit they do get is if you're in the alley, who are you grabbing to run up behind you and take your side? Who would you rather face at the end of the alley? Stipe Miocic or Mighty Mouse.
Who would I fight of
right.
those two?
Right.
Mighty Mouse, clearly.
Yeah. Right. Because you're at least, you hope you got a shot.
Well, at least the fight would last 25 minutes.
He can't knock you out, right, yeah, and you exactly, might have time
yes,
to run.
For sure.
And,
yes.
Oh, boy.
Now even you're on board. But I mean, I don't think you made Stipe wait that long. I think that's a dumb move. Because, I mean, in 8 weeks, you could literally probably have Stipe. Let me pull the event schedule up. I think you could literally have Stipe on probably 202 at this point, which isn't too far out from the other side, and you let somebody else get medically cleared, and maybe they get to fight the new champ. I don't know. Maybe it's Alistair at that point. I think with this heavyweight division, you just kind of keep plugging through it. I mean, we don't necessarily need a dominant champion. I know that they would love somebody who's marketable and like have their version of a John Jones in that weight class at this point, or obviously a Conor McGregor, which I don't think we're going to see really in that type of situation for a while, but I don't think you wait that long. I don't think you wait until 200's done to kind of set up this next fight. I just think that's waiting way too long in this situation.
Well, and you might be right because, of course, he was back in Cleveland hitting home runs,
mm-hmm.
you know, with the Indians.
I'm looking at the schedule. We don't have anything concrete for 202. We don't have anything concrete for 203. Obviously, they got to get to 205. I don't know if Stipe is your dude that you put in New York.
It's 205 New York.
205's New York okay. right now. So, I mean, you've got 2, 3, and 4. 202, 203, 204. I mean, he could main event any of those cards. He could sub-main 05, I think. I don't think you main event him in New York at this point. But I don't think you necessarily wait for 200 at this point and wait to see who wins there because you've also got two cards that month. You're going to roll through, as much as we've had breaks here, we've got two cards in July. You've got 200 and 201, and that's a pretty tight window considering how late 200 is. It's July 7th or 8th or something
sure.
like that.
Yep.
July 9th. So we're going to have 21 days between pay-per-views, between 200 and 201. So, I don't think you wait at this point to put Stipe Miocic in a championship fight. You make the Overeem fight, you make the rematch, decide which one, and we see that, you know, relatively soon at this point.
Should be Overeem, if you're asking.
I believe so, too. I don't have a big problem if you want to rematch it at this point.
I don't either.
Overeem would, because then you just put, what's he doing now? Because he's actually kind of been waiting now for a couple of weeks, maybe a month. Are we a month in since he beat?
Yes. Yep.
Arlovsky. So I don't have a problem with that fight. I think it's a fun fight. I think it's a good fight. We'll get to drag out the which Alistair do we see arguments that we always have. Because we've seen on point Alistair for a while at this point. And I think you're going to need that dude because I'm not saying striking-wise that Stipe can go in there and go toe-to-toe with a guy like Alistair Overeem, but I certainly think he can land some hits
yeah,
and land some punches.
I mean, he can't touch him, right? If he touches Overeem, you're going to get the same result.
Right, exactly. So I think, and out of all the guys in the heavyweight division, kind of looking at them and how they line up, you know, I didn't think, as big and as bad as Andrei Arlovsky is, just him putting his hands on Alistair was going to knock him out. I think Stipe proved that, hey, if I can get my hands on you, I can knock you out.
Well, and more specifically, if you're going to run at me and let me plant my feet and counterpunch you, I'm going to plant you on the mat.
Mm-hmm.
The co-main event, Jacare stopping Vitor Belfort and continuing to bring up two questions. One, I don't really want to spend a lot of time talking about, and the other one I'm fascinated about. I don't want to talk anymore about post-TRT Vitor Belfort. It is what it is, right?
Is that still a thing?
Well, you see that stuff pop up every time he loses. I think it's more interesting.
I think you're giving too much credence to like single tweets sometimes, Eric.
I watch a lot of
you out of the echo chamber sometimes.
I watch a lot of tweets when I'm watching
that's
these
what
events.
I'm saying.
Like
but
a lot of them.
Like so like you got 30 guys that tweet about this with a total of 57 followers. That's not, you know, that's not really a lot of people.
Okay, fair enough. That's
so
not
F
what,
those 30 guys is all
not
I'm
exactly what happened, but what I'm more fascinated about.
I don't think it's post-TRT Vitor. I think it's he's getting old.
Well,
at
he's
some
getting
point,
old, but like listen to this statistic.
He's 40 years old, right?
Listen to this statistic. Vitor Belfort has been a Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt since 1999. Yet, in recent memory, any human being that gets on top of him ends him dramatically,
mm-hmm.
which begs the question, what sort of Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt is he? That's not to say that in a jiu-jitsu competition, I wouldn't pick Jacare 200 times out of 100 over mm-hmm. Vitor Belfort, but Jacare had one leg in this fight.
Are you calling out Carlson Gracie?
One
is that
leg
what you're doing?
In
you're
this
calling
fight
out Carlson Gracie?
No, I'm not. Why would you call out the teacher? What I'm saying is, like, Vitor Belfort do some jujitsu. I'm not calling Carlson Gracie because he's not on the mat.
No, do you think this is one of those things, though, where the guys get really good at what they know and what they do, and then, you know, you get away from it? And what can happen in that situation is you're just not as crisp. You're not as tight as maybe you used to be. I think, as everything does, everything ages in MMA. And a black belt in 1999 in Brazilian jiu-jitsu may not be worth what a black belt now is in Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
1,000%. And I guess that's my point, is that this seems like a check-the-box sort of thing. I got my black belt, done, moving on.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I bring it up is because the guy who stood across the octagon from him started in this sport as one of the most dangerous jiu-jitsu practitioners in all of MMA, and very quickly fell in love with his ability to knock you out silly with his hands.
Right.
And here is a guy who's evolving as a striker who beat the Phenom in Brazil, like I said, with one leg. That is the reason why you are seeing Luke Rockhold and Michael Bisping, because Jacare is having knee surgery, because he injured his knee a week before the fight and didn't back out. So with one leg, took down Vitor Belfort, mounted Vitor Belfort, and finished this fight.
In less than a round,
with Vitor looking, like you said, very old and very out of his element.
Yeah, and I don't know. And I guess to give credence to those 30 dudes and their 50 tweets or 30 followers, I mean, you could say, I guess, with the aging, some of it's post-TRT, but I think a lot more of it has to do, it's aging. Vitor wasn't going to be the Phenom for 50 years. It just wasn't going to happen. I still like him as a fighter.
How dare you, sir?
I'm sorry. So maybe he and BJ Penn can have. When's BJ coming back? Isn't BJ coming back?
He's fighting Cole Miller coming up here.
I mean, we could see the same thing with BJ Penn. I don't want to discount the prodigy, but
yeah. I don't want to like get totally derailed here.
Was everybody like something in the 90s? They were the prodigy. Yeah. They were the Phenom.
Yeah, they all have these weird nicknames. I will say this, and we'll move on from this. I'm much more comfortable with Cole Miller and BJ Penn. It seems much safer for me than Dennis Seaver pounding BJ Penn in an octagon.
Well, I mean, yeah, and then this was a situation now where, if we're going to step back and really look at it, should Vitor Belfort be anywhere near the top of the middleweight division? I know that, you know, he came close to subbing John Jones and has gotten a lot of cred off that and gotten a lot of fights off it, as he deservedly should. But let's remember when he was actually in the middleweight title fight against Anderson Silva, who right after that fell off the planet
right
against Chris Weidman twice. You know, he was given his lunch of Anderson Silva foot and told to eat it and enjoy it.
Yes.
So
yes.
It's interesting. Ronaldo Souza, I love the fact that Jacare is just going to go get his surgery. He says, go ahead and fight for that title. I want it when I'm back.
He has been.
And he's called him out. He's like, I want, you know, and this was before, obviously, Weidman pulled out, but he called out Rockhold or Weidman. He didn't care who won. He's like, I'm going to go get my surgery. I'm going to be 100%. You better be ready for me. So I hope the fact that Weidman's out here. So, okay, we'll jump slightly ahead here because I still think we want to get to Cyborg, obviously.
There's a couple I want to talk about.
Let's not jump ahead because I'm going to talk about Michael Bisping in this whole title situation coming up when we do the preview.
We'll get in that in a second. I want to very quickly talk about Cyborg's debut in the UFC over Leslie Smith. I thought it was everything I expected it to be. I saw some people on multiple channels talking about how it wasn't that impressive, or I don't know what they expected it to be. Do they want her to murder her?
No. Here's the problem. It was a quick stoppage. I'm sorry. I'm going to tell you it's a quick stoppage because we talked about this a couple weeks ago. Who was it that did the mount? The mounted triangle to stop the fight. And we mentioned this a couple weeks ago. I can't remember who it was.
I can't either. But yeah, I know what you're talking about.
But we talked about this. In these situations, if you're that dominant and you're going to finish the fight, and she didn't have to do it, but I didn't mind in that situation where if the fighter's going to crucifix somebody or triangle mount and then it was a triangle body lock mount. I thought this was quick. When a fighter's moving her feet and trying to adjust her position, you don't stop the fight. And I don't care if you think Leslie Smith had the right strategy or not. You can't look at that fight 10 times out of 10 and see that she was moving her feet and trying to push through when the fight was actually stopped. Yes, she's getting punched. That happens in MMA. She was trying to do something. Now, was that something going to happen? I have no idea. I really, really doubt it. But I don't want that to be the way that we end fights. Probably wasn't going to get out of it, so I'm just going to stop it. That's a bad way to end a fight. And I think that some of that's going to rub off online and go, oh, man, she didn't really finish her. Look, Leslie Smith was still moving. Cyborg can't do anything about that, but I can certainly understand where that sentiment comes from.
And I guess that's where I wanted to direct the sentiment, right? Cyborg had nothing to do with that. Cyborg is doing, that's the terrible, terrible reffing that you saw all night long and the even worse judging that you saw all night long, because in Brazil it's notoriously bad, and it was bad, bad, bad at UFC 198. I guess, save for the stoppage, like you said, I'm with you. I don't think that she was going to get out of that. I don't know really what you expected out of Cyborg other than a quick stoppage.
No, here's the problem. You what you expect as a fan in these situations is a definitive stoppage, and she wasn't able to get that, and that was because of the ref, but it still falls kind of onto Cyborg. And it's certainly interesting to kind of hear her. She's kind of she doesn't seem committed to what she wants to do. This was the rumor that we heard. Can she make 140 easily? Can she do this so she can get to 135? Well, right after the fight, she says, I'm here to bring 145 to UFC. Okay, but you've been calling out Ronda Rousey over and over again. And maybe they're looking at that. Maybe they're looking at 145 in UFC, and we're certainly not going to talk about Ronda Rousey a whole lot until she tells us whether or not she does or doesn't want to fight. But right now, if you want that UFC championship, I respect Cyborg for trying to essentially create it for herself by bringing that division in. But the championship is either with Miesha Tate at 135 at this point, or it's farther down the line, which you're not even getting close to, right, with Joanna Jędrzejczyk.
But 138.8, I was impressed.
That's why I was really impressed going in, but then I was a little frustrated. You know, she tweeted something out a little bit later. Featherweights, is that what 145 is for the women?
I think that's what they're going to call it, yeah.
I don't think they're calling it something. I don't know who created the graphic. But I'm here to bring the featherweights to UFC. Like, oh, damn. I was really hoping you'd be here to fight some of the fighters we already know. I have no doubt you're the most dominant 145 woman in
right.
Invicta.
Right.
And that's the other problem. It's not that now you're going to come get the UFC belt. You're going to bring all the same people you beat up to UFC because that's where the division is right now. There's not a bunch of 145-pound women in UFC waiting to fight. And she did made a decent point where most of the women had dropped, but I think that was also a natural evolution of the fighting, not just the fact that these women, I can only get to 145. And I can't get to 135. I think a natural progression in that women's division has been a lot of women got to 135 and go, oh, okay, this is my weight class.
Well, because if that were true, right, because you've got to look at history to kind of lay mm-hmm. out how the sport is built. If that were true, we'd have a 162 in men's.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a huge jump between 55 and 70. So clearly there are a lot of guys who are cutting.
Yeah.
And some of them in very unhealthy ways. So if that were a thing, that there was just this litany of human beings that wanted to fight at a different weight class, you'd have 62 or 63 as a in between 70 and 55. Or, as you've said before, is it 95? You know, 195 between 85, 205.
Right.
Right. They've done neither of those things. And there's clearly a lot more men fighting the UFC than there is women. And I guess the only thing I liked about not calling out Ronda Rousey was I sort of liked her making the statement that this was about me. I wasn't making it about her.
And I didn't need her calling out Ronda Rousey after the fight. I certainly thought that this was going to be, and it doesn't even have to be Ronda Rousey. I was a little disappointed because Cyborg at this point, over and over and over and over again, we've been working to get her in the UFC. And the mm-hmm. championship division there is 135. And 140 was supposed to be, okay, can we do it? Because remember when she said she couldn't make 140?
Yeah.
Remember when she said, I would die if I tried to make 135?
Well, Tito said that, but yes.
Well, if you were 135 or 138.8, you could probably make 135. And again, I know it incrementally becomes more difficult as you get closer to that weight. I guess I was just a little disappointed right off the bat. Like, oh, she wants to create a division. Cool. But I don't know how much the Cyborg division is going to sell on UFC. Can it be a nice co-main event situation? Sure. Cyborg versus Cyborg versus Cyborg versus. But I think, you know, we've got a lot more. I mean, that's essentially what it would be.
No, that's exactly what it would be.
It would be much like Anderson Silva during the height of his run. It was Anderson Silva versus Anderson Silva versus. And, you know, can we do it? Sure. But that's not what we wanted to see and not what we were hoping to see after what was going to be hopefully a definitive win there. I don't think she could have done any more with what she had, Eric, but I certainly see the sentiment online as being validated slightly simply by the fact that the referee screwed up. That's not on her, but people are like, man, I really want to see her knock somebody out.
Yeah.
I thought she was going to, you know, be a freight train in the cage, a mini Brock Lesnar of the women's division just coming in and just tearing through people. Instead, she got a fight stopped while another girl was squirming around trying to get out from underneath her.
The rest of the card shook out like this. Shogun gets a decision win over Corey Anderson. Lil Nog bests Patrick Cummins very quickly, and the internet celebrated, and so did the crowd, by thinking that Lil Nog was back. Let's pump the brakes. It's Lil Nog, right? Big Nog is nominated to the Hall of Fame this year, which is a very exciting announcement, and obviously doing that in Brazil was a very cool thing, and that sort of wraps up UFC 198. The only other thing that happened this past weekend is Phil Davis and King Mo fought in Bellator with a very terribly.
Who won that fight?
Phil Davis won by boring you to death because it was just not a very good fight. There is plenty of news, though, happening in the world of mixed martial arts, not the least of which is the one that we've been teasing for the last 20 minutes and want to really dive into. UFC 199 was supposed to be Luke Rockhold taking on your boy, Chris Weidman. And Chris Weidman pulled out this week, and then we had to wait a whole day. And we waited that whole day because I think they were trying to figure out just how bad Jacare's knee was, because they wanted Jacare. They wanted it to be Luke Rockhold and Jacare at UFC 199.
Can I say, as much as I want the fight, I wouldn't have been a fan of that?
I'm not disagreeing with you, because I want him to have a full camp. I want all of that stuff because I think this fight will be awesome. So instead, you get Michael Bisping against Luke Rockhold as Chris Weidman is out with what seems like, Ken, a pretty catastrophic neck injury.
Yeah, I haven't. You'll have to update me. I haven't kept up on that as much as I had hoped to.
It's a bulging disc. It's a nerve. He's getting surgery. Ugh. He's maybe 3 months on the shelf to try and get this thing back to where it's supposed to be. It stems from, I believe he said on his Facebook page, years of wrestling, and then it leading up to this. At some point during camp, he would have one training session where his neck would just get really stiff and he couldn't train.
Couldn't move.
And then it would just kind of do, like, loosen up and he'd be fine. That did not happen in this camp. And he did everything he could to not pull out. There are plenty of people who are obviously going to hate on him for pulling out. Luke Rockhold is certainly one of them. And he has every right to do that when a fighter pulls out of this fight. However, this seems like when you hear about RDA breaking his toe a week and a half before a fight, I think you should light the internet on fire, right? When you see the extent of this actual injury, it seems one of the more legit reasons not to get in an octagon and fight another human being.
Yeah, I don't have a problem in this instance with him pulling out. I mean, we find out what happens later, and I know the notice isn't great, but the notice wasn't terrible either, that, you know, the event is going to be shuttered. So we've got an interesting option here with Michael Bisping. He's always been bridesmaid, never the bride, every time we see these title eliminators. He's been close so many times.
When I was looking back before the show, we have talked to Michael Bisping on this show six times. And all six times, the very first question we ask him is, hey, man, are you ever getting a title shot? And these were like when he would be on tears of six, seven, eight fight win streaks and just could not get to the altar, so to speak.
Yeah, it was always a number one contenders match for the most part, and he would always be that dude that couldn't quite make it through. Now, he's coming off a big win against Anderson Silva. Obviously, Anderson Silva didn't like how that one played out. I mean, I think anybody who went back and rewatched the fights and figured things out from the get, I didn't see a lot. After everybody settled down, I didn't see a lot of people who disagreed with kind of how that fight played out. Especially that third round. There were a lot of people mad. Well, it's over. That's over. It wasn't over, and it clear as day wasn't over. And Anderson made a dumb, almost rookie move in that fight by not walking over and finishing the fight. And he wanted to call a shot, and he forgot he was third down on the card that night. Actually, it was headlining, but it was a fight pass card.
Sure. So, and you're referring to the fact that he lands this flying knee and thinks he's Babe Ruth and goes to celebrate when the fight clearly wasn't over.
No, it wasn't over. I'm not saying he couldn't have finished the fight, but
no,
again, we
certainly could.
We just talked about it. We don't want fights finished because of what we think is going to happen. We want fights finished because of what is actually happening in the cage. So, I like this fight. I've never been the biggest Bisping fan. You're aware of that.
I am.
I do like in this situation, though, he's stepping up. He does say he has 24 pounds to cut in the 2 weeks. So I think essentially, I mean, even it's not a short camp for him. It's going to be a weight cutting camp is essentially what he's going to be doing. He's going to be working out and trying to get that weight down.
Well, and I think if we were able to get Sean Desai on here and talk about what that strategy would be like, that's what it would be anyway. It would be a lot of cardio, because at this point you're not going to learn flying wheel kicks. That's not what you're going to do for the next 2 weeks. You're just going to try and make everything a little bit tighter and prep for this fight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he says he's walking around 208, 209. So that's going to be a decent cut. That he has to go through. And I hope everything goes well for him, because I just hope that we don't get to like the day of and the weigh-in and the poor guy's like 3 or 4 pounds off. I mean, you know they'll still have the fight, but like again, you didn't get the title fight.
Well, because let's remember, if you're kind of new to the world of mixed martial arts or new to this podcast, I want to remind you, there is not a 1 pound grace limit for a title fight. He has to hit on the number, 185 or below. He cannot be 185.5. He cannot be 186, which you can be in a non-title bout.
Yeah. So I think he's got to be also, I'm not sure about the new rules, but he says he needs to be due 200 pounds a week before. So he's got to do this in a pretty quick fashion. His first level of cut has to be, that's 15 pounds. It's about even, yeah.
Yeah, about a pound a day or something like that.
Yeah, it's cool because you've got 8 plus the 5, and then you've got like, so yeah, it's going to be interesting. He says he can do it.
And, you know,
some fighters know themselves, and they change the diet, and they do it.
They know their body, and they figure that out. So that is your rematch at one night, or your match.
If he stays in the U.K., the food's terrible, so he won't be as tempted.
Well, he's been in the U.K., and he's 208 pounds. So he's eating something there or drinking a lot of beer.
Maybe it's those Scotch eggs.
Yeah, it's always the Scotch eggs.
Good.
One more thing about 198, because we forgot to really touch on it. Matt Brown had a really, really rough night, as Ken alluded to. He was attacked 3 times on his way to get just...
So wait, we're not going
to
talk about the other championship fight?
Which one?
Dominic Cruz?
We will in a second.
Oh, okay, all right.
I just wanted to say, you know, he lost to Damian Maia, and then afterwards he gets attacked by his former jiu-jitsu coach, and that is now going on in Matt Brown's universe. So he'll flush
that. So what do you think about... See, I get that you get fans riled up, and it's heated, and you know what? Culturally, I may not understand this. I think you've got to stop these situations where fighters can be touched by fans.
1,000%.
I really think you do. I mean, I don't need it looking like the Roadhouse performance stage at the beginning of the movie where we got chicken wire in front of everybody. But I don't. You can't let a fighter get hit in the back of the head while he's going to the cage.
Well, and that was that was the only guy that they kicked out. He was hit 2 other times, and only
they didn't kick out the guy that hit him. They kicked out the guy that tried to grab his shirt.
Oh, that's the guy they kicked out.
That's the guy that kicked out, I'm pretty sure.
But either way, they only kicked one of the 3 people that were attacking him on the way out to the thing. All right, that said, we'll get...
Can we get taller security guys? I feel like there's a couple of jobs in the universe where you can have physical limitations without somebody calling you out. And you think in Brazil, I don't feel they're the most PC place on the planet. That's just my guess.
Right. Okay, Dominic Cruz.
He's fighting. Gry Faber.
Glad we stopped.
I didn't have anything on it. You usually want to talk about it.
We'll talk to that when we get close.
What do you mean closer? It's the same week as the Bisping fight. It's next week.
It's not next week.
Two weeks. I'm sorry. It's Friday. It's okay.
And I think, you know, look, to me, the Weidman out of the Rockhold fight is bigger news than those two continuing to yell at each other about which one is a more terrible human being.
No, okay, but I mean, Weidman being out, though, makes that fight much more interesting on the card, don't you think? And not just more interesting, but more important on the card, too.
Yes, I would also say, though, that
the rubber match, Eric.
Dominic Cruz is one of those guys that I think makes that. He's one of the few guys that I think, because the amount of times I'll just use you as a focus group of one, right? Like, Dominic Cruz is one of those guys in those lower weight divisions that you talk about constantly. And the same with Uriah Faber. So putting these two guys together for the rubber match, yeah, it's important. Yeah, it's big, because that's what this division needs. That's what those lower divisions needs. That's why Conor McGregor is so vital to the organization and why they need to keep him the hell out of 170, because they don't need him there. There's plenty of exciting stuff happening at 170.
Do they need him for a rematch against Mighty Mouse? Do they want a super fight down there to kind of get some eyes on that division?
And we'll kind of merge these two together so that we can kind of keep some cohesion here. The announcement that UFC 201 in Atlanta is a surprise title fight of Demetrius Mighty Mouse Johnson against Wilson Reyes. Yeah, you need Dominic Cruz to go do that rematch, because I understand that DJ's trying to beat Anderson Silva's record, and I can have some respect for that. However, from an organization, I think you've got to get some eyeballs down there. And fighting a journeyman like Wilson Reyes, nobody is even going to care. I actually saw, and this is not from, as you were making fun of, 30 guys on Twitter with 50 followers. This is legit MMA luminaries and journalists.
50 total followers.
Yes, that's what I was saying. One of them tweeted out, like, I used to work for, and I won't even name the organization, I used to work for this publication. I don't have any idea who Wilson Reyes is.
Yeah.
Like, I used to write MMA professionally. I don't know who this guy is. And I think that sums up what's wrong with that division, is that he's been the only flyweight champion, which is totally fine. Worked out well for Anderson Silva until a guy named Chris Weidman came along. The problem is, at flyweight, you are not seeing any guys flooding into that division that are in the least bit competitive.
And did we figure this out? Three more fights? Like, can they afford to go three fights, I think it was?
Yes, two or three more fights. But, like, the only guy
He's just going to sub co. He's just going to sub main event. And I don't even want to say co-main event. I mean, he's just going to...
But what do you do that? Okay, so he does two or three more fights, and what, does he walk away and work for Twitch? What is he going to do? Because what I was going to say is the only interesting fight to me after Cejudo, or actually before Cejudo, was going to be John Lineker, but he had to go up because he can't make that weight.
Mm-hmm.
And Lineker's now fighting Michael McDonald, which I think is awesome, at Fight Night 91. But that was the only guy that I thought, this could be a really interesting fight, because he, much like Stipe, could end a fight horrifically.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be a good thing for DJ to be in a fight like that. That said, right now he needs to finish this Wilson Reyes fight. Dominic Cruz needs to beat Uriah Faber, and then those two need to meet for a rematch to unify both belts. That's what they should do.
You want a unification just match?
Both of them.
So
yes.
What, we get rid of 135 and 125, make
and
it 130.
130, and then
130?
We're done. Yes, and then we're just done.
I might not have a big issue with that.
All right, the last bit of news.
Is Cyborg part of that division? That's what I want to know.
I don't know. Last bit of news. Wednesday night, Conor McGregor met with Lorenzo Fertitta and Mr. Dana White. And he says the meeting went well. He was interviewed yesterday, and during the interview, the guy was talking to him and asked him, like, if we're looking at this like a football field, where are we in the game? And Conor responded that they are in the middle of the field and in a very good place. So, meaning, we don't have a fight.
Like, wait, what kind of is, like, American football or
yes,
soccer? Because if we're middle of the field in soccer, you kick that ball down to your forward and boom. Are
yes.
we that close?
Like, we are not. No, we're not talking about Real Madrid. We are talking about perhaps the Patriots. Or
okay. Patriots on the 50 or the Bears? Because that's a big difference.
The nuance was lost on me, actually, about which team was going to be playing football.
Because, yeah, Tom Brady on the 50 or Jay Cutler and his sad face on the 50.
The point being, it seems like we're in a good place. Conor said, look, both sides were emotional. We both came together because we know that there's no place for emotion in business, and things are good. So we will wait and see what happens with that. I would not be surprised, as you said, you've got 203, 204, and 205 out there. 203 or 204 is going to be Conor McGregor. 205, I think they're going to reserve that to mostly New York guys. But McGregor on that card would make it huge. I just don't know how huge they want to. I don't know. Your thoughts?
I think they want to get John Jones to New York.
Of course so they do. See. But do they want to put Conor too?
No.
Okay.
I don't think you need Conor too. Because I know John, and I forgot the numbers, but they weren't the best John Jones numbers.
No, they weren't.
But they were pretty solid considering he came back against a guy that wasn't a champion and he hasn't fought since January. So I think John Jones coming back to New York means John Jones just beat DC, and that's huge. And that's a big deal, and that's going to be a big, big fight if that kind of goes along the line. I think the reason we don't see 02, 03, 04 lined up, because we're not going to line these up until we know who's winning and who's losing.
Well, and we're not
going to. That's kind of how the fight game works.
We're not going to line
up. Plus, we might sell the place, so we don't care.
Well, yeah, they might sell it. And the other thing, Ken, is like we said at the beginning of the show, there are 8 title fights in the next 30 days, so we have no idea what's going to happen for 203, 204, 205.
Because, yeah, you're leaving a gig. You know what you do? You lift the rug up, you put a lot of things under the rug
yep.
there.
And then you walk out the door.
Then you walk a block away, and you don't come back.
Speaking of sweeping it under the rug, last thing before we bounce for this weekend, as always, you can catch up with us on Twitter and Facebook by searching WOW Show. Mayhem Miller is supposed to be fighting in Italy this weekend.
A real thing?
This
Are
is a
you
real
kidding?
Thing.
I thought he's in jail.
Well, Italy apparently doesn't care. He missed weight.
So wait, they tried to get that girl on murder like 87 times
yes.
in Italy.
Yep.
Like they wanted to send like the Italian army into Seattle or something.
Yes.
But Mayhem's cool to fight there.
Yes. He was supposed to fight at...
Way to go, Mussolini's.
He was supposed to fight Luke Barnett, and he missed weight by 24 pounds. The promoter gave Luke 30% of Mayhem's purse and tried to give him an extra $5,000 to take the fight, and Luke said, nah. So they brought up another welterweight to fight him, and now Mayhem does not have a fight because he missed it by 24 pounds. So no matter what's happening in your world today, you did not miss whatever goal your boss set in front of you by 24 pounds.
That's Michael Bisping is closer to his weight.
Yes.
And he didn't know he had a fight until last night.
And if you, and I'll put the video on our Facebook page if you've not seen it. Mayhem walks up there and is surprised he weighs 209 pounds, as if that's it, like he hasn't been checking weight the whole time.
Has he been looking at stones or something? Was he over in the UK? Did he think there was a conversion rate that was going to help him out in Italy?
He's got an app on his phone. It seemed to work out.
I weighed fine when I stood on my iPhone. Is that not what you do with these?
Have a wonderful
weekend.
Is that not
a scale?
Catch us on
Lil
Twitter.
Lil Wayne pours champagne on his phone. I can't weigh myself.
Catch us on Twitter and Facebook at Wow Show. It is Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.